I'm Austin.
I'm Bridget.
And I'm Lauren. And this is Tipsy Ghouls, a podcast that searches your neck of the woods for the stories that keep you up at night about true crime, conspiracies, and you guessed it, ghosts.
So without further ado, let's get started.
Hello.
What have you guys been up to?
Hi.
Quarantining.
Yes. Painting.
Quarantine.
No, I'm still out in the public every day, and I've recently downloaded Spotify rather than Apple Music.
Finally.
Oh, God, Spotify. Spotify. Save a life.
So I've been knee deep in playlist making.
Been elbow deep.
It's honestly one of my favorite things to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so fun. I've made a quarantine happy hour or power hour. I made a country power hour. I'm like halfway through my classic rock power hour.
Mm, that's a good one.
And then I collaborated with you guys on a messy bitch playlist.
I listened to
that's
that.
Fire.
Which we could.
It's fire.
We could make that public one day and it be our like official Tipsy Ghouls messy bitch playlist. We could have like a spooky bitch and a messy bitch playlist.
Yes, I like the spooky bitch one. It's like Fleetwood Mac and like
all the witchy stuff.
A bunch of other stuff.
Yes, I'm down for that. I love Spotify.
Me too. It's my favorite.
I think I'm actually addicted to music, like for real. Like I wake up and I'm like, I gotta hear a song.
I'm addicted to podcasts. Yeah, I have to listen to a podcast every day.
Literally like wake up and like just a random song will be in my head, and if I can't play it, it is so frustrating. Like today I remembered a song that was like some jam session I heard on YouTube once, and I spent like an hour Googling it and finally found it, and I was like, oh, finally. I just had to listen to it for like an hour.
Lauren, I just thought you were I thought you were drinking straight moonshine from a jar just now.
White lightning, baby.
I was like, oh, it be like that, do.
It do be like that.
It do be
like that sometimes. Speaking of drinking, I just got done doing a power hour.
Mm. Yes.
So I'm feeling pretty good. Okay. I drank craft beers during my power hour.
Ooh, that's fun.
I'm drinking a craft beer, too.
I'm drinking.
Are we all drinking?
No, I have a White Claw. Sorry. I'm saving my craft beer for a very special occasion tomorrow. It's my brother's birthday, and we're recreating a bunch of bars in Dayton, and I'm facilitating a crafted and cured tasting, so I'm saving them.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see that. You have to take
videos.
That's
fair.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
You have to take videos. That sounds so cool. I am drinking from Sonder Brewing down in Mason, the Voss Kolsch. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I really like Kolsch's. I don't really know what it tastes like, but this is like malty.
Mm.
Like malty AF.
Oh. Usually Kolsch's just like taste like nothing to me. But maybe that
one's better.
It
tastes kind of like a, it's just like a golden ale.
Oh.
German, yeah, it tastes like kind of like a Pilsner style.
Mm, like a German version of like a lager or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
That sounds good.
I'm drinking, it's called Mad Manatee from Bold City Brewery. I decided to go with a local beer tonight. I think I'm going to start going with more Florida beers. Hold on a second. So this beer is beneficial to the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens.
Oh,
cool. It says all portions of Mad Manatee IPA sales are donated to the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens Manatee Critical Care Center. I love that.
Aww. Does it have like a picture of an actual manatee that's in the zoo?
No, but it has a picture of this cute cartoon manatee that has an anchor tattoo and then a scar because he swam too close to a boat, which isn't cool.
Aww.
It's actually kind of sad.
Sam.
But now that I know it's benefiting animals, I'm gonna go buy it every time I go to Target.
Yeah, you will.
Shop local, y'all. It's a India Pale Ale.
Sounds good.
It is pretty good. Not bad.
I am drinking a lemon White Claw.
I didn't like those ones.
Yeah, the lemon flavor was in like the original White Claw packs that they put out, and I didn't really like them. I don't know why they added it into this new pack.
But you know what? I think when lemon was an original White Claw, it tasted like disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this.
I don't think they taste good now.
This tastes less like alcohol-y. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think of it like lemonade, I guess is better, but as just like a lemon flavored White Claw.
That's fine. Yeah, you know.
I think from the new pack, I like the tangerine ones the most. Because, like, mango's already there. Watermelon, it wasn't that great.
I love watermelon.
I didn't like... The tangerine one was the one that I liked. Yeah.
So the state that we're covering this week is Connecticut. Connecticut. And I have some fun facts pulled up. That's how I remember how to spell it.
Do you want that to be in the... draft. Connecticut.
I mean, that's how you spell
Connecticut.
It. It's a that's a life hack, a free life hack. True. I'll give it to you, no charge.
Yep, you're welcome.
That's from my best selling book.
That's how I spell Wednesday. Yeah. Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Connecticut fun facts.
Yeah.
Noah Webster, the author of the first dictionary, lived in Connecticut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The first automobile law was passed in Connecticut. And the speed limit was 12 miles per hour. That's a fun fact. And it is home to the first...
Probably as fast as the car could go.
Yeah, pretty much. That's Florida.
That was the max speed.
That was the Autobahn back then.
They were like, we want to get there, but we want to get there alive.
12 miles per hour.
Are you crazy?
It's also home to the first hamburger, which I feel like that was a fact about another state.
It was.
Yeah, what was that?
That was the fact about
Arizona.
Colorado cheeseburgers was...
Colorado.
Colorado was cheeseburgers.
So this is hamburger, I guess. So they should have a rivalry. I'm surprised that that's not played up.
Debatable.
The Polaroid camera, color television, and helicopter were also created in Connecticut.
Wow.
Ooh, and this is a good one to end it. Actually, there's two good ones. It's illegal to walk on your hands in Hartford. And in order for a pickle...
How many times did that have to happen?
Yeah, I don't know.
Honestly, like... They're like, damn it, that boy's on his hands again! He's going to kill himself one of these days.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to create that law. Like, what the fuck could that be?
Some 14-year-old boy was trying to impress a girl, and... He, like, fell and busted his skull open, and they were like, nope, no more handstands for our town.
No more of that. And the last one, in order for a pickle to be considered a pickle in Connecticut, it must bounce.
What?
Are we going around bouncing our pickles?
I guess. I wonder if that's a common practice.
Is that sanitary? They go, wait, sir, hold on a second. And then it bounces up and they catch it and they go, yep, she's a pickle.
Yeah,
she's a pickle.
She's a pickle.
That's a modified pickle you got there, sir.
If you're from Connecticut, please confirm our theory. Yes. Do you have special pickle bouncing stations that are like sanitized?
How high does it have to bounce?
Yeah, like what is bouncing?
Hey, pal. Really?
Like, what if it's...
Can I bounce your pickle?
That might make more sense, actually, than bouncing an actual pickle. Connecticut, please help.
Connecticut, explain.
Yes. On our new segment on States Explain.
Inspired by that. Fine. Connecticut, please explain.
Connecticut.
It's like on other podcasts when they do like corrections corners or they correct something from their previous podcast, we just have someone come on from that state and they explain what everything means. Yes, that we said.
Yeah. Yes.
So each episode is explaining all the things from the past state and then us questioning a new state in the second half.
Yep.
Like, what the fuck? And then we find someone. It's not a bad idea, honestly. All right. I know my story is short.
All right.
and down to business.
Let's Are you go. Ready?
It's, Are you ready? It's Who Wants to Be a Millionaire when the lights go dun 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 dun
dun dun. Can I phone a friend, please?
Yeah, please.
The answer's no.
For $1 million.
The answer is, how high does my pickle bounce?
Lauren, do you care who goes first this week?
No, I don't care. Mine's kind of short too, though, so it's a toss-up.
Yeah, mine is not, probably not real, because I couldn't really find many like fun, lighthearted conspiracies in Connecticut because Sandy Hook kind of took over the internet in that realm.
Listen, yeah. you gotta hit cryptozoology like a fucking brick beach.
Cryptozoology.
I get so into cryptozoology. It's like Bigfoot, yeah, like, and okay. Yes. Puckwudgies, mm-hmm, and Mothman. And
yes.
Oh.
That's the category.
I need to add that our conspiracy father did not know what Mothman was until just last week.
Whoa, me? Wait. Are you calling me the conspiracy father?
Yeah, oh, who's yeah. our conspiracy father?
Like, wait, your dad?
Ew, no.
I hadn't heard of Mothman. I don't know how. I've heard of, like, Grassman.
He's, like, so close to us, too. He's, like, 6 hours away from us in Ohio.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was asking my Actually, parents about it, and they said they've seen pictures of bats that are actually the size of humans, like, hanging in people's garages and shit. So I was like, oh, okay.
That's Mothman.
Yeah. So, but I don't think they had really heard about it either. That might be why. I don't know. I never heard about it. But I'm happy to learn.
Go ahead, beige, with your...
Your dad says, Susan, grab the shotgun. Mothman's flying around the backyard again.
We gotta go.
All right. So my story for this week for Connecticut is a myth kind of legend that's very popular, apparently, in the Connecticut area, called the Melonheads. Now, I found a couple articles on the Melonheads, and the main area that they were talking about was the Milford area. I'm not exactly sure where in Connecticut that is, but it seems like there's kind of an area close to the Appalachian Mountains, I presume, that has a lot of these myths, so a lot of, like, strange things that live in the forest and things like this. So the most common one is these Melonheads. And there are other states and places nearby, sometimes some stories in Ohio and Michigan that have Melonheads as well.
Oh.
Yeah. So apparently this is a pretty widespread legend.
Be on the lookout. Yeah.
So the Lemonheads, or Lemonheads, the Melonheads. I don't know why I said that. It's just candy in the woods. I found Lemonheads in the woods.
You just see the little trail of yellow dots in the woods. You're like, the Lemonheads
Those
are back.
Lemonheads.
Those Lemonheads are at it again.
Damn. Oh, God. The Melonheads are apparently a group of giant-headed mutants who live in the outskirts of town. In Milford. Yeah, I know. And it's partially funny, but also kind of sad, because what they're talking about is an actual disability where you have water on your brain.
I know.
But, like, this seems, of the article that I read, it seemed like all I read a lot of the responses from the audience, and, like, they didn't seem like the most educated people. So, like, probably not very, you know, accepting. In the 80s.
I was just thinking about the cone heads from SNL.
Yeah, that's... yeah. So, anyway, these melon heads are... What they're talking about is a real disability where the portions of your brain kind of fill up with water. It's called, like, water on the brain. But there's... I didn't find any evidence that there were actual...
Hydrocephaly?
Yes, that's what it is. Thank you. I didn't find any evidence that this was actually... people that had that living in the woods. I think it's just like a legend. There weren't actually people with disabilities living in the woods, so we're not actually making fun of any real people, I don't think. But this legend is that this group of people is an inbred group of mountain folk. And there's a couple theories of how they became who they are. So there's a theory that they're a lost colony that got left behind, like back in the revolutionary era. Are there people that escaped from a mental facility that apparently was abandoned back in the woods? And there's theories that they attack people, possibly eat people, and then attack people's cars when they drive through these melonhead roads. And apparently they have like super strength and all this. So there is an actual real...
Just all around bad news.
Yeah. So there's an actual real story about a group of isolated Appalachian folk called the Melungeon, that I believe is an older story, or it's believed that they lived a long time ago. And they are a group of mixed race descendants of European outcasts, freed slaves, and Native Americans, and kind of like early damned people from the American society in revolutionary times. And it's believed that Melungeon was bastardized into Melonheads by the local people. Mm. So it's possible that that is what is being passed down, the story of Melonheads, but it's also possible that it's just a story. So a big part of the story is that there are these Melonhead roads in a lot of these towns that are claimed to be affected by this legend. And these are backwoods roads, like very narrow, not paved, usually like gravel roads that go deep, deep into the mountains. And so the legend is that's where all of the Melonheads live, back up in the woods, or there's even some houses up there that are deemed Melonhead houses. And that's where, especially like teenagers would go to drive around and see if they could find them. It's like a little spooky fun game. And then some actual people that, are doing more realistic research, like going up on hikes and stuff, up these roads. So there are a couple, if you're in the Milford area, you probably know, this probably means more to you, but there's Zion Hill Road, in Trumbull, it's Velvet Street or Dracula Drive, and in Shelton.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah, is there a story behind that one?
I don't know. I did see a little snippet of a story that I can touch on after this, because I think that might be connected. And in Shelton, it's called Saw Mill City Road. So these are really old, narrow roads that go up into the woods. And there are some houses along these roads that are, like I said, deemed to be Melonhead houses. But they're also mentioned in a lot of these personal accounts. So this is where the story actually gets interesting. Because this was just an article that someone read or someone wrote called The Connecticut Damned, or their website was called The Connecticut Damned. And so it was just kind of her take on it, what she's heard, and then she drove up in the road and didn't really find anything. But it gathered a lot of personal accounts in the form of funny comments that... might give some insight on how these began, but also some of the crazier theories. So I'm not going to say like the name that was on the website where these are from, but I've grouped them in similar categories. So this is where the story gets interesting. All right. So I'm just going to read them and you can tell me what you think. So the first one, some friends and I drove down Velvet Street or Dracula Drive tonight, actually. No lie, we found a severed deer leg. It would not be surprising for a car to accidentally hit a deer in that dark, windy road, but given the story of the Melonheads that we've all heard growing up in Trumbull, it freaked us out quite a bit. So that's kind of the level of, like, the normal story, like, oh, we saw something creepy, like, but...
oh, God, something moderately creepy.
Yeah. This is another one. I also grew up in Milford in the 1970s, and remember the stories. I always thought that Melonhead probably referred... to hydrocephaly. So it's another person from the area that thinks it's probably the same thing. And then another one, I remember driving up Zion Hill Road back in the day with a car full of friends. We did see a Melonhead. I hate to admit it was 25 plus years ago. Scared the shit out of us. Still tell stories to my kids and nieces and nephews to this day. Remember, ladies, they kill the guys and keep the girls for themselves. Tell it into.
Oh,
so okay. We're not going to visit that location. Yes. After yes. This.
Yeah, so we're not going there. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so now there's a group of comments that revolve around a Melonhead house that's up there. Me and some of my friends went to Zion Hill Road over the summer a few times. There's a residential road and the creepy one. The creepy one has a few houses, and we stopped in front of one, beeped numerous amounts of times, and a whole family came out with bats and chased us. Even though we were in our cars all the way down the street. Probably normal people that hate how many people come to find the Melonheads. But if a whole family's got bats on deck, like, that's pretty sketchy. Here's another one about...
I want you to know that I thought you meant, like, bats, like, flying bats when you said that, because we had just been talking about bats.
A whole family of bats.
That'd be some shit.
No, people with baseball bats, which is almost scarier. This one says,
and these times a flying bat is scarier.
That's true. Only these times. This next one says, my friend told me that her and her friends staked out Zion Hill Road in Milford, and they saw a Melonhead get out of a car, open the trunk, and take a large cooler out covered in blood and carry it into the house. I assume they were parked at a house. And the Melonhead got back into the car, revved his engine, and drove out, stopping 2 feet from hitting them. She also told me that the witches of Milford lived in those woods and hung people from the trees, and the nooses are still hanging in the trees. So some spooky shit up spooky. In these woods. Yeah, there's some weird shit. So there was one story about the asylum theory. This one says, I've heard this story, and it's always the same. I've been told that a long time ago, in Trumbull and Monroe, down that velvet road, there used to be an asylum, but it got burned down. Later, police and officials found that some of the patients were missing, known as the infamous Melonheads. I've been down Velvet so many times, night and day, never have seen anyone there. So it's interesting. And then there are some stories that, when I read these, I was like, that makes a lot of sense. So I won't preface them.
Oh.
Yeah, so this one's a funnier one that has no punctuation, so forgive me if I stumble.
Just read as one run-on sentence.
The stories about the Melonheads and Sawmill Shelton are all made up during drinking parties in the 60s. They aren't true. We made them up. Just like the white lady at Indian Wells State Park. My brother put a sheet over his head with a flashlight and ran down the banks along the railroad tracks, and we made fun of them. That's all they are. Fun urban legends, not reality. So I was like,
why you gotta ruin it like that?
And this next one
seems fake.
So this says, growing up in Sawmill Road in the 70s, I spent a lot of my free time hunting, fishing, and partying. Pretty much in that order. I saw the Sawmill.
Me too, friend.
I saw the Sawmill Road. There was an old 2-track road just past the bridge called Paramine Road. I was hunting in that area and came across a small opening in the side of the ledge big enough to crawl in. Outside of the hole was an old army tarp over a fire pit. Looking around, I found many animal bones. Now, I don't know about Melonheads and all, but there was definitely some people living in the land. And as for that cave, never did get the nerve to crawl inside. There's another one very similar. During the 80s and in high school, Sawmill was the place to hang out at night and on the weekends. One night, there was a small group, about 8 of us, talking, laughing, playing music. Out of the blue, some random guy comes up to us and asks if we have a lighter. One friend lit the guy's cigarette, and he walked away alone into the dark. We were pretty freaked out, but he was a normal guy with a hoodie, but too dark to see his face. He was older, not a high schooler, and I remember his raggy clothes. Perhaps people do live in the woods, back then at least. This sounds what like those two stories are like,
oh god,
one, there's people partying up there, which makes sense, but there's also like weird fucking shit going on, people living in the woods, like what,
like
the
hells have eyes. Yeah.
And so then, okay, so this one also kind of feeds into the story that there's one Melonhead houses but also the partying. it threw me off because it starts with, "Well, Ray, you should have asked," which is him responding to someone else. The Melonhead's house. The Melonhead's house is about a mile down on the right side of Velvet Road, coming from the Tasha side of Trumbull. The property had an abandoned paddleball court and an abandoned outdoor pool. Apparently, the Melonheads had some money. They were very well alive and fruitful around 1980, and growing up in Trumbull, my friends and I would frequent Dracula Drive, often for keg parties at the reservoir. No one was ever hurt, but many were scared for real. So I'm not sure if he was saying that he was partying at the house, or he just saw the house. Maybe he just thought. But definitely people partying, and definitely a weird, creepy house. But the gold mine of this story is this woman named Gilda, who was posting on in this on these articles with some very interesting stories. I don't think you guys are ready for this.
I'm ready.
Hit me.
I don't know.
Hit me, Gilda.
Hit me.
I had an 11-year relationship with a Melonhead. His name was Harley.
What?
It gets better. His name was Harley King. Supposedly, he had relocated to Phoenix, where I met him, from Trumbull, Connecticut. He said he was born on Velvet Street. We moved around a lot, usually when someone turned up missing in the small towns we lived in throughout the years. He reverted to his mutant ways when we lived in Ruth, Nevada. I escaped one night when he forgot to chain me to the bed. I know. Not I now live in California. Several people from the town of Ruth have turned up missing, and it's suspected Melonhead King, as he commonly refers to himself as, behind the disappearances. Once they found the arm of an unidentified person in the hills behind the house we lived in. The flesh had been eaten to the bone. I have changed my name to protect me from the reporters who have hounded me for so many years. So if you are on Velvet Street after dark, beware. The Melonheads do exist, and whatever you do, don't marry one. So,
what?
This had many responses.
That's terrifying.
This had many responses that were like, good one. So there is another comment from another person that did lean more towards this crazy side about them being real. So it starts with, apparently they were fighting with someone named Dave. It says, "It's the truth, Dave. We had the big heads down south too. I'm from Arkansas and we got plenty of big heads there. They're just like normal folk, just a tad slower to catch to things. They walk with a shuffle and has those big heads. Their vision's pretty blurry too. I think when they attack folks, they're just confused. I protected my big head till too many folks went missing. That's when he chained me up. But I was lucky and escaped. Folks can't help who they love. Even the big heads need love, Dave. I don't do the outer space stuff. That's for the city folks. I was born in Arkansas, Dave." So
I protected my big head.
Yes. So it kind of sounds like they're just talking about
this
someone.
This is so messed up.
I know. That one, I think they're just talking about someone with a disability. But also if they got chained up by someone, yep, they should probably do something about that. So,
and not just put it on a message board.
Yes. So that's the story of the Melonheads, which is very
interesting. Do with that what you will.
Yes. There were many other comments.
That is interesting.
Yeah. There were like half the comments were like, "I've driven up those roads a million times and I haven't seen anything." And then half of them were like, "I've actually run into one and it's scary as fuck." But a lot of the things I did see about like, "Oh, we saw one." It was back in like 20 years ago, like back in the 80s when everyone was partying up there. So I wouldn't put it past some kids to like run around and scare people. But
yeah,
believe what you will, but the Melonheads. But the Dracula Drive, I was going to do a story about a family back in the 1800s that, like, when tuberculosis was going around, a lot of their family members were dying from tuberculosis. But back then, it was believed that tuberculosis was more of, like, it turned you into a zombie and it made you want to, like, suck people's blood, which is, like, the Dracula part of the story. So this family had like 4 people die of it, and they thought that it was their dead relatives coming back to life and killing their other family by drinking their blood. So they dug up their family members and burned them. And that family was the inspiration for the Dracula stories.
Ooh.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Cool.
Yeah, that wasn't a long enough story to do a full thing on, but I thought it was perfect for our brand.
Yes. So
yeah, Connecticut's got some crazy shit going on.
They really do.
Yeah, what the fuck, Connecticut? Explain, Connecticut.
Someone, Connecticut.
Explain.
Explain.
Connecticut, explain. Austin looks traumatized.
You do.
I'm just thinking. I'm just trying to process all of that.
It was a lot.
That whole thing.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, so somewhere along the line, I did hear that melonheads are a product of the asylum that burnt down.
Oh.
So they were originally being tested on in that asylum by a doctor. I don't remember the doctor's name or anything about him. But when the asylum burnt down, they escaped and they started living in the woods.
Interesting.
Oh.
I did read one comment that I didn't put in there, but it was a kid who their dad worked at the asylum and just used to like be like a janitor or something. And he said that the melon heads were real and that they did escape. And it was people that lived in the asylum.
Right. Right. I guess there was a doctor in there that did a bunch of testing on the melon heads, and like he was really cruel to them. Mm-hmm. And so I don't remember where I heard it. I feel like I heard it from another podcast. I feel like it was either from Two Girls, One Ghost or from And That's Why We Drink. But they were talking about how they were really cruel to the melon heads, and then it burnt down and they escaped in the woods, and there was something to do with one of the nurses like took care of them, I think, or something like that. I don't remember. Oh,
that's nice. Hmm. That's sad.
Yeah,
that is sad.
So there's a little more to the story out there probably.
Yeah, and this I was kind of going on the conspiracy side, and I just there's just so many good comments I couldn't not read.
Can't pass it up.
I don't need any more information.
Nope, that's it.
This is all my time. But yes, now you know the Melonhead personal account.
Interesting. I never heard of the Melonheads before.
Yeah, I don't think I had either before this.
Mm-mm. I'm a weirdo. I know a lot of weird things. I can't help it.
That's okay. I know a lot about murders.
Speaking of murders.
Yes.
I was like, are you guys ready?
Yes. Give me some spooky shit.
For murder. Murder.
Red.
So, originally when I went to do this story, I picked something that had the name Connecticut in it. But it turns out it wasn't in Connecticut. So, I'll be telling that story at a later date.
Perfect.
But my sources for today are the News and Clues, WordPress blog, Wikipedia, Chicks on the Case, an article on the Hartford Courant, whatever, by Dave.
I pulled Did something you? From... Oh, yeah!
Aw. By Dave Altimeri, Colin Poitras, and Jane D. And then there is a novel called The Wind Cries Mary, Murders That Shook a Power Town, and that is by Erica Gray. And then I got most of my information from a Reddit post by the user Searchin' Girl.
Ooh, we love Reddit.
And, yes, we love a good Reddit thread. All right, so I will put a warning out there that this does contain violence against children. So if you do not like that and don't want to hear about it, I would skip forward about 30 minutes. All right, now that they're skipped forward.
Now that they're gone.
Here is the story of the boogeyman of New Canaan, Connecticut. New Canaan, Connecticut is a small town of about 20,000 where the wealthiest families in the United States live, and it was actually named the number one top earning town in the United States by CNN. Wow.
That's crazy.
Like the average household income is like $82,000 a year.
Oh my God.
New Canaan is a town where residents sing carols every year on Christmas Eve since 1916, and they have a yearly Easter egg hunt, All Hallows Eve parade, and just more wholesome rich people fun. New Canaan is actually considered part of the Gold Coast of Connecticut as well. And by all accounts, New Canaan is one of the most affluent and safest towns in the state. It was actually ranked number 5 as the top 5 safest town in Connecticut. But there is a dark secret behind this quiet coastal town. 10-year-old Mary Mount was enjoying a beautiful spring day on May 27th, 1969, by wearing a pink dress, and she was chasing her cat outside. When Mary's mother sat the family down for dinner later on, Mary was nowhere to be found. Her mom became worried and contacted the police, who were sure that she had been kidnapped, and they were just waiting on a ransom note that unfortunately never came. The police and Mary's family were without answers for days that turned into weeks. And in these last 2 weeks of May, two other girls went missing. Dawn Cave, 14, from Bethany, Connecticut, and Diane Tony, 11, of New Haven, Connecticut. And this was all in a 40-mile range of New Canaan. In June, Mary's body was found in the woods at Wilton Reservoir with her head bashed in by a rock, but there were no leads and no forensic evidence. And thus began the boogeyman's reign of terror over eastern Connecticut. Although 1969 was over, this was not the end of the boogeyman, and more little girls disappeared. First, in 1970, Jennifer Noon, age 5, went missing from New Haven. And then again in 1977, from Monroe, Connecticut, Renee Freer. All of the girls were abducted, killed in the same manner, so with their head bashed in by a rock, and then dumped in wooden areas. So they had zero suspects, zero leads, zero forensic evidence. And to this day, there has not been an arrest for these senseless murders. So maybe asking yourself, wait, Lauren, aren't there any suspects? Were there ever any leads? Well, let me introduce you to the 17-year-old John Rice Jr., an honor student at New Canaan High School, a gun enthusiast, and an Eagle Scout.
And here he is, folks, John Rice Jr.
Yes, come in, please.
Hey.
I'm sorry. Too hard.
On December 5th of 1970, John rang a woman's doorbell to ask for help with his car, but the woman immediately became suspicious and refused to help. John backed off, but later admitted he went to the house with intent to murder whoever answered the door. And where was this house, do you ask? Right near Wilton Reservoir, where Mary Mount was found a year and 7 months earlier. 5 days later, on December 10th, 1970, John Rice Jr. brutally murdered his mother, his brother, his sister, and his grandmother.
Oh my God.
3 out of the 4 family members had their heads bashed in.
Oh my God.
Paper trail.
Yep. John pled guilty to reason of insanity and was found not guilty and was... Wait, okay. So John said that he was not guilty for reasons of insanity, and he was found not guilty, so he was committed to a state hospital for the criminally insane. John was released in 1977, the same year that Renee Freer from Monroe, Connecticut was murdered. And remember, there was a 7-year gap between when these girls went missing and were murdered, which is the amount of time it took from him to be arrested and convicted and sent to the mental hospital.
7 years, God.
John said that he liked to drive as a pastime and used it to sort out his aggressions. So even though all these neighboring towns were 40 miles away, it's still only a 45-minute drive, like via highway. So it would be very easy to get there. And as an Eagle Scout, John would have been well-versed with the outdoors. Now, obviously, this is only a small excerpt of what actually went down and the evidence that he might actually have killed all of these girls. So I definitely recommend checking out the book, The Wind Cries Mary, Murders That Shook a Power Town by Erica Gray, because that whole book is about linking John Rice Jr. to these disappearances, because if he was a budding serial killer, like, it would be an easy jump from killing these girls to killing his family, you know? Are these all just coincidences, or are they grasps for justice decades later? Who knows?
It's very suspicious that everyone had their head bashed in.
Right. No, yeah. Three out of his four family members had their heads bashed in, and then all of his victims had his head bashed in too.
So whatever happened, was it just he was never?
So this is some shit. So apparently after he killed his family, he got into his car with a bunch of guns and ammo and just drove to Arkansas and then turned himself in. So I guess he got out of his car, drove to the police station and said, "Hey, I blacked out for like 3 days and I don't know how I got here."
Yeah, of course. Of course you say that.
Right. But then his dad has defended him from day one. And I guess there was this weird law in his grandma's will that said, and he got all of her money.
What the hell? So he's just out roaming?
What? I don't know if he is still alive or not, but yeah, I mean, he got out of the mental hospital and his dad has basically protected him ever since. That's terrible. No one knows like what he's up to, what he's doing. So
he could be a guest on the podcast.
I mean, he could. If you want to claim your innocence, come on.
No, let's not.
Or if you want to.
That would be one way to blow up. Our podcast would get huge. An exclusive interview.
Truly.
That's interesting. That's a good one.
Yeah, well, that was just insane.
I like a good unsolved mystery.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. But like, it's still unsolved. That's always an interesting one.
Well, I originally looked up, it was like top 10 most heinous crimes in Connecticut history. And then I found the one where he killed his whole family. And then the further I dug, the more people thought that he was connected to all these disappearances and murders of these kids.
So far we have an urban legend and an unsolved mystery. Does that sound like someone that you know? We're copying you, bitch.
Hopefully not.
Well, let's round it out with a scary story.
Spook me.
Are you guys ready?
Somebody spook me.
All right.
That's such a good joke.
Are you guys watching Dave?
Somebody spook me. It's actually Suck Me, but okay, ghost time.
All right. My story this week is the New London Ledge Lighthouse in Groton, Connecticut. My sources are N.E. Light's blog, the Hartford Current, however you say that, and New London Maritime Society. So to start us out, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the lighthouse itself. This is the boring part, but we will, I promise you, get to ghosts and the stories quickly. So located on the Thames River in Groton, Connecticut, is a lighthouse that stands out to its fellow beacons, officially put into commission on November 10th, 1909. The Ledge Lighthouse was created to match the architecture of the surrounding homes in the area. The Lighthouse Bureau published the following description of the work in 1912. The structure consists of a timber crib 52 feet square, and 31 feet high, filled with concrete next to its outer face, and the interior filled with riprap and gravel, with a deposit riprap on the outside 10 feet deep, next to the crib, and 82 feet square. The top of the crib extends 3 feet above mean low water and is capped inside the upper timbers with a layer of concrete 3 feet thick. This layer supports the concrete pier. So, this is basically telling us that the house is sitting out in the middle of water on its own piece of concrete. And something that makes the lighthouse stand out to others is it actually looks like a house. Like, it's not like your cylindrical house. It's a red brick home, 3 stories tall.
I've seen this and, before.
It has the light, the circular light, whatever, on top. The cellar in the upper portion of the concrete pier is contained coal and oil rooms, a cistern and a fog signal engine room, a kitchen, sitting room, workroom, and bedrooms were located in the first story of the lighthouse, while the second level had 4 bedrooms. The third story is divided into 3 rooms, one of which contained the fog signal apparatus. The work of the superstructure was sublet to the New London firm of Hamilton R. Douglas, and the total cost for the lighthouse originally came to $93,968.96.
Wow.
That was back in 1909.
Wait,
$93,968.96 in 1909. Do you guys want to guess how much it would have cost today?
Ooh.
$150,000.
No.
$4 million.
Beach?
$4 million.
That was overshot, but in today's money, no, you're good. In today's money, it would have cost $2,666,242.86 to build.
Dang.
For the total lighthouse with inflation.
The ledge
lighthouse has been in steady operation since its commission and is currently operated by New London Maritime Society. So I didn't want to spend very much time on the structure. It is a beautiful lighthouse. If you look
creepy.
It up, it is. It's really cool looking. Yeah, it's a really cool looking
lighthouse.
Oh,
that's cool.
It's cool, but like creepy as fuck.
That's
my dream home.
It is really cool. The reason I didn't want to spend too much time on the lighthouse itself was because it is plagued with a wealth of stories. So we're just gonna get started with the haunted.
Yeah.
Hauntings.
Hell yeah. Hell.
So. Strange events were said to be commonplace in the Coast Guard era of the New London Ledge Lighthouse. Doors opened and closed themselves. The TV turned itself off and on. A deck swabbed itself. Coast Guard officer in charge, Randy Watkins, said he once heard his name being called from the upstairs room while other crewmen were asleep.
Are you saying that the deck cleaned itself?
Yes.
Okay, can I move in here, please? Wow. I need my house to clean itself.
It didn't clean itself. It just sounded like someone was swabbing the deck.
Might as well clean it if you're going to make it sound like it. What the fuck?
If you're going to make the noises, you might as well just do the work.
I'm not paying you to make the noise.
Watkins.
Sorry.
Watkins' wife, Lucretia, spent a night in the master bedroom and said that she was awakened when the door opened, followed by the eerie feeling of someone in the room staring. And one time, 2 fishermen secured their boat and came inside to visit. The men laughed and talked of a ghost, but stopped laughing when they saw that their boat had been unmoored from the dock and was drifting away.
Ew.
They these these and many other odd happenings were invariably attributed to a ghost named Ernie, who has become probably the best-known lighthouse ghost of the Northeast. So author William O. Thompson has written that Ernie would turn the foghorn on and that he sometimes polished the brass and cleaned windows. Actual ghost sightings are rare, and supposedly only women really see the ghost sightings at the lighthouse.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, Ernie. Yeah. Fuck.
He's Ernie only interested. Dude. He's only interested in the chicks.
I mean, being stuck on a.
So Ernie has. Ernie is. How do I say this? He's like. He's a legend. He is literally a legend. Not like he's a legend, but like.
But also he's a. He's a. A myth.
But like. Stories, there are multiple stories of him out there. And here are a couple of the stories that explain his existence. So in the 1920s or 30s, a new keeper came to New London Ledge Light. The keeper's true name isn't known, but he was known to all as Ernie. Ernie had a new young wife, half his age, who lived in New London while he stayed at the lighthouse. What started as a happy marriage dissolved into bitter despair and desperation as the young woman pined for a normal life with her husband. One bleak day, Ernie found a letter his wife had left telling him that she had run off with the captain of the Block Island Ferry. The keeper's will to live was crushed. Some say he jumped off the roof of the lighthouse to his death below, while others say he drank himself senseless and then accidentally fell to his death. Some claim that he made an oath before his death that he would avenge himself in some way. So no one has uncovered evidence of that from the lighthouse, and there's no record of a keeper named Ernie. But there may be reasons to believe that the lighthouse is indeed the scene of paranormal activity in other ways. So in December 1981... Dr. Roger Pyle, who calls himself a ghost psychologist, visited the lighthouse along with his wife, who acted as a medium. According to the Piles, the spirit revealed itself to be a keeper named John Randolph. The Piles reported that Randolph had never been married, but that he had lost the woman he loved because of a terrible argument. The distraught keeper proceeded to stab himself in the throat, falling from the lighthouse to his death. Pyle performed a ritual that was supposed to free Randolph's spirit. Some say that it did release the spirit and activity ceased. However, some witnesses argued differently.
That's spooky. I wish you guys could see me and Bija's faces you were saying that. We were like
kombucha girl. Like, you stab yourself in the neck? I can't. Like, why?
When I'm listening to podcasts and they talk about anyone getting stabbed, I cringe all the time. Yeah. So like me talking about it is making me cringe.
Like you're living on a lighthouse where you can just jump, but you stab yourself in the neck instead. Okay.
Gotta make sure. Gotta make sure he's dead.
I guess. Yeah. So when the automation and So the automation and destaffing of the lighthouse ledge, the New London Ledge Lighthouse, had been scheduled for 1986, and according to the Coast Guard crew, Ernie had apparently become agitated over the coming change. One man said that papers on his desk rearranged themselves, and another said his bed moved around his room by itself.
Oh, that's spooky.
Said that he eventually started sleeping on the couch because he got tired of the bed moving around.
You were like, why? I would jump off the
only one.
I would kill myself.
Only one of the crewmen at the time expressed doubt about Ernie's existence. He said, if he kicks me out of bed and throws me down the stairs, I'll leave. Stories of unexplained events continue to emanate from New London Ledge, and the book called Haunted Lighthouses and How to Find Them by George C. Stites. Bray Rafferty of London Ledge Lighthouse Foundation offered an alternative to the Ernie story to explain the origins of the resident ghost or ghosts. Rafferty had met a woman whose grandfather helped build the lighthouse. According to this woman, the strange phenomena at the site started before the lighthouse was even completed, with eerie sounds, weird shadows, and tools that vanished during construction.
Whoa.
Rafferty's search showed that there was a shipwreck on Black Ledge about a decade before the lighthouse was built. Many of the dozen or so passengers died, including a newly married young woman.
I have a question.
Yeah. What's up?
Raise your hand in the group.
Did yes, you Lord. Say what type of rock it was built on or no?
I did not. I don't know what type of rock it was built on. So the woman's husband desperately combed the nearby shores but found no signs of her beloved. Witnesses then saw the man walk slowly out into the water towards Black Ledge until he disappeared and drowned. So if you're inclined to believe, a spirit may have been already waiting for a place to haunt. And that was when the lighthouse was built.
It's like a star is born when he walks into the ocean. That is.
I've never seen a star is born.
There's three versions of first.
I haven't seen
the early one that was made like in the 40s or something. The guy kills himself by walking into the ocean.
I've never.
And there's still more stories offered to explain the strange goings on at the lighthouse. So according to a brochure produced by Jerry Olson of the New London Ledge Lighthouse Foundation, it has been said that around 1913 to 1914, a sailboat departed New Jersey bound for New Bedford. The sailboat passed through a Long Island Sound where it ran into a tremendous northeast storm. According to the story, late that night, the lightkeeper looked into the water and saw a man and a woman swimming, trying to desperately reach the lighthouse. After helping them ashore, he learned that the sailboat had capsized and they had tragically lost their daughter in the wreck.
Oh, shit.
Early the next morning, the keeper arose to check on the guests, and to his astonishment, he found no trace of the couple.
God.
Days later, when the seas calmed down and the keeper reached the shore, he was told by a friend that they had rescued a young woman who said that her parents had been lost in a sailboat wreck. But this woman, too, had mysteriously vanished.
Ew. Oh my god, I just got the chills. God.
It has been said that on particular dark nights, a spirit has been observed roaming the lighthouse searching for a loved one. Over the years, people have encountered the spirit and have named her the Lady of the Ledge. Jerry Olson claims that he has had a personal encounter with this mysterious lady. One day, while he was alone in the basement of the lighthouse, cleaning the cisterns, Olson says he heard the distinct sound of a woman clearing her throat behind him. He says he immediately had the image of an attractive middle-aged woman in his mind's eye, and upon turning around, he saw nothing.
Whoa.
In recent years, paranormal investigators have visited the lighthouse on several occasions. Investigations clearly show that the lighthouse has it's very much the center of spiritual activity. They go as far to say that the third floor is the vortex of the activity, and that the northeast corner of the building is the most active. The spirit or spirits are benign and not at all dangerous, although one person did feel strongly that someone did not want them there. In August 2006, members of the paranormal investigation team called New England Ghost Project spent the night in the lighthouse. No ghost appeared, but the team's psychic medium apparently made contact with an angry male spirit. The entity claimed he was a worker performing maintenance on the roof of the dwelling, and that his co-workers locked him out as a prank. As he attempted to go get inside, he slipped and fell to his death. The accident, said the spirit, was covered up by those involved. There's no hard evidence to support the story, but it offers an intriguing alternative to the usual tale of Ernie. Ernie may be just an excuse to brush off strange happening at New London's Ledge Lighthouse, but there is no arguing that this building holds a past full of secrets, ghosts, and intrigue. And that is my story for Connecticut.
That was a good one. That lighthouse looks creepy as fuck. But very interesting.
I wonder if it's built on limestone.
I don't know.
Is that conducive to spirits?
Yeah. But also, water holds memories. Mm. According to Frozen 2.
True.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a true statement in like real life, but
well, it's interesting too that like that guy walked out into the ocean, and then as they were building it, it was still haunted. Like if he was just still there in the ocean all that time, that would be crazy. That makes a lot of sense.
So many people that like, what I think is crazy is the family that like the husband and wife ended up at the lighthouse, but the daughter ended up on shore, and they were both found, but they both, like, all three of them mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, that's creepy as fuck.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Yeah.
Do not like.
Yeah. And, like, that house out in the middle of the water, there's just something so eerie about that.
Right? Yeah, go look it up online, because it's a beautiful building. Like, I would live, if it was on land, I would live in it. I would buy that house. I would live in it. But it's creepy that it's out there by itself.
I was trying to find some pictures of like how far out it is. And it's like pretty far. I couldn't really find exactly how far out. But like there's pictures of it from far away. It's just all water.
Yeah. I didn't look at and see how far it was from land.
Austin, tell everyone where you can find us.
Yes.
Oh. So if you're looking for us, if you are new to the podcast and you want to find us on social media, we are at Tipsy Ghouls Podcast on Instagram. Our link tree is also attached to Instagram, so you can find the other places that we are located on Instagram. We try to post regularly, so you can find new posts and information about our episodes. If you want to leave us a story, you can leave us a story or send us recommendations for our future states at tipsyghoulspodcast@gmail.com. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That'll help us get to the top so that other people can find us, because we want other people to start hearing us. So rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And there's only
you want to hear your stories from your neck of the woods.
Yes. And if you can explain Connecticut, please do. Please send us a message.
Yes. Urgently requested ASAP. Yes.
Yeah, because it's Confucian. I'm Confucian.
There's just some weird shit happening up there in New England.
Connecticut, you wild.
You wild, girl.
All right, you tipsy fools. Are you ready to close this podcast?
Yes.
Tipsy fools. All right. Well, remember, if your beds are rocking, Ernie might be knocking.
And melon heads need love, too.
And when someone comes to your door with car help, definitely shut the door on their face.
Definitely.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Two more guys.
Somebody spook me. Yes.
Okay. All right. Fuck.
That's going to make it in the bloopers for sure.
I think I want popcorn after this. Baby.
Baby.
I should probably close my blinds because I'm going to get distracted. Yeah. I wish my
that was weird because I couldn't.
I
see.
Wish my room. Mm-hmm. Stop. Stop. Wait.
Stop. Bunch of poopies.
Oh my god, there's a little French bulldog walking in front of my window right now, and it is the cutest thing ever.
So cute.
Little baby! Ooh. Hi. Bye, I'll miss you. Peaks, no valleys, only peaks.